Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another great episode we have here of Suspense Radio. I am your host, John Robb, and tonight we have a very, very special show for you. Doing something a little different. Generally, we have a couple authors on, but tonight we're going to bring you the other side of the coin, because we're going to have author Chris Farnsworth on. He's going to talk about his latest novel, The Blood Oath, but we're also going to have his book publicist on, who's the Vice President and Director of Publicity from Goldberg McDuffie Public Relations, Megan Beatty, on the phone. So it's going to be a great show. The SmackDown tonight is also going to be a little bit on the different side. We're looking at the top fictional characters out there that have been written. Now, one was written, one was not. So we're going to do Indiana Jones versus Robert Langdon. Both of them are historical artifact seekers. And we're going to see which one was better. So stick around, because 60 Minutes of Suspense Radio starts now. I'll tell you, if that music doesn't get you pumped up, I don't know what will here, what will, for a great Tuesday night we have here in Southern California. And first, we're going to start off, because like we always do, we kind of go back to what we had on our Friday show, which was it was another great show that we had here on Friday night. And, you know, everybody can go on and listen to the past shows that we have here by going, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/suspensemagazine, and you can check the archive shows. Everything is up there, and you can be listening to what we had on last Friday, which was New York Times bestselling author Margaret Weiss and Chris Kuzminski, and it was an outstanding show. So all of them are always archived. We're also available on Netflix through the Roku, iTunes, 75 other podcasting sites out there. So there's no excuse for you to say, I can't find the show, because even though we are suspenseful and we kind of stay in the weeds and kind of in a cave, we do have the show everywhere. And so I would tell everybody to go to suspensemagazine.com. You can find it on Suspense Radio along with everything else that we got going on here. So I'm going to start off tonight because one of our great Facebook friends that we have, and he's done a lot of good work, and his latest book here just came out today, and this is Graham Brown, and his book Black Sun just hit the shelves today. We received this back in June, the manuscript for Black Sun. Didn't have a chance really to review it yet, and we're going to have to go over it because we received so many books. But it actually was supposed to come out September 2010, but it actually hit today, so maybe they just got the date a little messed up. But it is following his thriller, Black Rain, and his character is Daniel Ladlow, and her team is back in Black Sun. And this kind of takes place on the trail of a Mayan legend that takes place from Washington, D.C. to Mexico to Hong Kong. So it kind of goes all over the world. So I highly recommend, because Black Rain was such a great book that you just, you know, have no doubt that Black Sun is not going to follow in the footsteps. So Graham Brown, Black Sun, is definitely one to go out and get right after you're done with the show, because you're not leaving to go to Barnes & Noble to go get that right now. Unless you have an e-reader or something, you can get it, but don't leave the show to go get it. So my second one here is by Soho Press, and it's by Michael Greenland, and it is called The Magician's Accomplice. Now, this book came out in July 2010 in hardcover, and Soho Press does a great thing because they have a lot of authors under their Soho Crime syndicate, and they put a lot of good authors out here. And Michael is actually a graduate of UCLA Law School in UCLA, and his book here, The Magician's Accomplice, is set to rave reviews. It is in the crime series. It goes a little bit further back. It's a Commander Jane Matnovia investigation, probably saying that wrong because, you know, I'm not very good with last names. But this is definitely one that you want to go check out. It's available everywhere. So that's Michael Greenland. And it is called The Garden of Betrayal. And this book has come out August the 5th. And Lee is also the author of Restitution and a great financial thriller here, which is what everybody's, you know, kind of in right now with the recession and everything else going on, that this is a great way to go ahead and pick up this one. Came back with fabulous reviews. We thought the book was great. And this is on bookstores right now, too. So it is by Lee Vance called The Garden of Betrayal. Check that one out. Last but not least is a book by P.J. Brook called A Darker Night. This one, too, is from the Soho Crime Series, but this does not actually hit stores until September 21st. Now, we just received this, but we also read the arc of this and said that it was a fabulous review, fabulous book, and we're so glad that Soho is, you know, doing a great crime series here. And it looks a little different from their normal books. If you ever picked up a Soho book, they kind of have a very distinctive cover. And this just looks a little bit different on that side. And it's called A Darker Night by P.J. Brook. So those are the four that are going on right now. Now, a little bit about tonight's guest, I want to kind of set it because we are doing something a little different. Author Chris Farnsworth, like I said, his book Blood Oath came out, and we actually went to his book signing that he had here at the Grove in Los Angeles. Matt actually went over there, and, you know, we met Megan. Now, we had talked with Megan before, and like I said, Megan is the Vice President and Director of Publicity for Goldberg McDuffie Communications. But, you know, she handles a lot more, you know, than just Chris. You know, she has Ted Decker, Alex Kava, John Connolly, you know, some really great works. And she's kind of going to – we're going to kind of do this where we're going to have, you know, Chris asking about his book. We're going to go with Megan on this side on, you know, how to submit and things back and forth. So you can kind of see, especially if you're an author, an aspiring author, you know, kind of how the process works for, you know, you to be able to go and, you know, find a publicist, you know, market. Because in today's day and age, you know, we've always talked that there are so many different avenues to publicize your book, but it's also just that much more competition. Because with all the e-books that are out there that you can kind of do yourself and very quick and easy, as soon as you get your manuscript done, you can have it into the hands of people, you know, within 20 minutes it'll be up and going. So, you know, it's a little different from back in the 70s and the 80s when everything had to be print and, you know, the book publishers kind of controlled everything. Well, now a little bit of control is a little bit more in the author's hands, but publicists are definitely something that you have to look for, whether it's outside or whether it's inside the publishing house. That is the number one, probably best way that you can, you know, get your name out there to whoever. But, you know, publicists that we've seen from the publishing houses, you know, they do an outstanding job, but they have a lot of clients that they have to deal with. And so, therefore, on the first couple of weeks when the book, you know, they can only do so much, and then they, you know, then they kind of have to fall off. Even though the book is still on the shelves and the book's still going, it's not like one of those, you know, blockbuster movies that you see the trailers for, you know, 4 weeks before the movie and then 1 week after the movie's gone, you don't see anything about it anymore because they all want that, you know, first initial hit. You know, a book lives and keeps driving on. So these outside, you know, the outside PR firms and Goldberg McDuffie is, you know, one of the top out there to find out, you know, how to better market yourself because you have to be able to market. And, yes, it's going to cost some money, and that's the way it has to be just because of all the competition. So what I want to do here is I want to go ahead and bring on Chris and Megan now and to introduce everybody. So, Chris, Megan, how are you guys doing tonight? And thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much, John.
Yeah, thanks, John. Thanks for having us.
Hey, no problem. Chris, I want to start with you a little because we went to your book signing here at the Grove. That was a couple months back, and Megan was there. And, you know, tell a little bit about, you know, your book because it's a vampire book, but it's much different than the normal kind of vampire book. So can you explain a little bit about, you know, Blood Oath for people that might not have heard about it?
Absolutely, yeah. The idea is that this is a vampire book, but this is not a sparkly vampire. The main character, Nathaniel Cade, is a vampire who is bound in service to work for the President of the United States and has been for 140 years. And it's his job to act as sort of a supernatural secret service. He protects the country and the president from any of the occult threats against it coming from the other side. And he's had a long and storied history, and the point of this book starts when his latest human handler, kind of his Renfield, the guy who has to go out and do things in the daylight world, is dying. And he has to bring on a new replacement. And the replacement is a young politician. For the first time, they're recruiting someone who is not ex-military or ex-CIA or ex-special forces. And the president has chosen this young man, Zach Barrows, for reasons that aren't quite clear at first. And together they have to face a threat that includes the real-life inspiration for Dr. Frankenstein.
And very interesting. Now, you know, I'm trying to, you know, I was kind of trying to look here at your bio and whatnot. Now, did you have any experience with, I guess, you know, kind of governmental secret service, kind of things like that? Did you have to go out and really research that because you weren't really familiar with it?
I was a reporter for a long time, so reporters are great at, you know, at becoming experts really quickly, or at least faking it. And I was, you know, I was lucky enough to have the help of a lot of people who have a lot of government experience. Chris Ensko, who used to be President Clinton's body man, the president's personal assistant, gave me assistance on the layout of the White House. My sister-in-law is an assistant U.S. attorney. She was able to check the manuscript for me for a lot of the technical details of working in Homeland Security and things like that. And, the rest of it was just basically a lot of research, a lot of digging.
And now, Megan, question for you. So when you got Chris's book in front of you, and that was something, I take it, Chris, that you had to probably send over to Megan?
Yeah, I knew that.
Why don't you tell me your process first, and then I'll get
sure.
her process. My fault.
Okay. The Putnam put a lot, you know, Putnam put a big investment into this book and into me, and I wanted to show them that I was taking it seriously. Their publicists are great, and after I met them, I was really impressed. But as you said earlier, they've got a lot of authors to cover, and they've got a lot of work to do, and they don't have time to do every little thing, to do everything for the author. The author has to do a lot for him or herself these days. And so I asked my agent, you know, who are the top agencies you could recommend for as an outside publicist. And I sent you know, basically just emails to each of them, and I heard back from Megan and from her boss Lynn, and I was just the most impressed by them. So I, you know, they looked at the book and they were so enthusiastic about it, and they were so just great, so, you know, easy to approach and easy to talk to, that I thought this would work really well. And I was really lucky. I think it did work really well. I think that you couldn't ask for a better launch for a first-time author.
Absolutely. I think that I totally agree with you. I just know, you know, when we received the email from Megan first, you could just see the excitement that was coming off, and I get a lot of emails from PR and publicists, and, you know, some you can kind of tell are lukewarm and some are very excited, and Megan was definitely one that was excited. So, Megan, when you got the book over to you from Chris, now, what's kind of the process from when this comes in? I mean, so does he, like, so did he call first, say what he does, and then he kind of submits it? How does it work on your end?
Sure. Well, like you said, John, with an outside PR firm, we work with less authors than an in-house publicist does, and that allows us to do more. So, and we also have the we're lucky enough to be able to pick and choose the projects that we work on. And I've been doing this, gosh, I think 13 years, and
lucky
I've always
13.
Believed
lucky
that
13.
The most important thing you can have as a publicist is true passion for the book that you're working on, and certainly you're going to feel more strongly about than others. Well, I think I Lynn, my boss, had emailed me like a one paragraph pitch on Chris's book, and I just was jumping up and down because I'm a big fan of thrillers. I've read thrillers all my life, and I've promoted a lot of them, and I'm also a big vampire fan. I was, like, avidly glued to Buffy and Angel, and I worked on a book about the new annotated Dracula. So, you know, I had the personal passion, and I also had a lot of experience working on the genre. So, you know, it was just a match made in heaven in terms of the book. And then Chris and I met for lunch. Gosh, that seems like a million years ago now, Chris.
Yeah.
You know, we met for lunch, and we had really great chemistry, and that's really important too with publicity, because it's, you know, it's not a science. It is, there's no formula. If there were, you know, every book would be a bestseller. But, you know, so it really, you know, you rely on the chemistry between the publicist and the author, and, you know, brainstorming and coming up with different ideas to try with the media and with the marketplace.
So you're kind of explaining almost the same thing, kind of, I guess, is almost what an agent has to go through, the same way when you know when an author submits their book to an agent. It's kind of the same process then.
It is. It's just a different part of the process. And Chris can talk about, you know, talk about his experience with his amazing agent. But it's really true. You know, there's that personal passion. There's the chemistry, and then there's, you know, the experience of, you know, who's going to respond to this book, and how do we get it out to the widest possible audience?
I'm telling you, I feel a lot of love in this room with the amazing agent and the two of you. I do. There's just a lot of love going on tonight in this room. It's really good. You know,
I've been really lucky. I got to work with really great people right off the bat. I mean, speaking of the agent, yeah, my peerless agent, Alexandra Machinist, she has the name of a Bond girl, and she's
she does.
Yeah, she's also and as tenacious as any Bond villain. She can do almost anything. I don't doubt her ability for anything. If she wanted to take over the world, we're just lucky that she's only in the field of literary representation.
Nice.
But like Alexandra, Megan carried a lot of credibility. I mean, again, this is the first time published novel, and a lot of people I don't think would have paid attention to this had Megan not been bringing the book to them. I think that it was her reputation and her credibility that brought a lot of reviewers and a lot of venues online for the book, for Blood Oath. I know for a fact there's no way that Poison Pen, which is a very, you know, a really important bookstore in Arizona and a really important in the thriller community, I don't think they ever would have had me there to read had it not been for Megan.
Now, Chris, I got a question for you that came from the chat room here. They want to know, how does being an investigative and business reporter differ from being the author of a novel?
Oh, it's so much better. Obviously you don't get to make stuff up as a reporter, at least, you know, not if you get caught. And people will, you know, you'll get fired for that. But what I came to realize about reporting was, I think I was an okay reporter. I was pretty good at it. But what I eventually came to realize was I was much more interested in telling the stories I wanted to tell as opposed to telling other people's stories for them. And I think that was, for me, the best part of the switch. I got to spend all day in my head with the characters I liked to develop. And I think, though, that there are very important crossover skills. I think research, I think learning how to listen to people, and I think learning how to look outside yourself for inspiration and ideas. Those are all really important to be, I think, a good novelist. And I think, you know, not that I'm saying I am, but I think those are at least things that helped me on the path.
Fabulous. And now, Megan, I have a question from you that's coming here from the chat. Megan, are you there?
John, yeah. Sorry, I lost you for a minute.
That's okay. That's okay. So the question for you is, can you describe the services that a publicist offers?
Well, you know, it really depends. It depends on the book. It depends on the author. What I do and what my company does is the first thing we do is if the book sounds like something that we would be interested in working on, we read the book because we have to love it because, you know, there's so much noise out there. There's so many books that we really have to be, you know, I need to be authentic when I'm calling up People Magazine or USA Today or whoever it is and saying, like, this is a book you need to pay attention to. So we read the book, and then it's a matter of talking to the author and figuring out what their needs are, what their goals are, and what we think we can do. You know, whether that be going after national print, online, you know, obviously social media has become more and more important, and that's something that the author can really take the lead on. But again, there's so much you can do, and there's the possibilities are endless. That one of the things that we can do for an author is help guide him or her towards what's going to be effective, what's going to make a difference. What, you know, you could do an interview, but is anyone hearing it? I mean, you want to do things that are going to be impactful.
No one's listening to this one. No.
Anyone out there? I hope people are listening.
Okay, go ahead.
So it just really depends. It depends on the book and what the subject is. And, you know, with Chris, we had, you know, vampires are so hot in pop culture. So we had a lot of fun playing with that. And, you know, there are countless websites about vampires. So, you know, we went after those with the book. Another kind of book, you know, it would be a whole different topic that we could figure out what those niche markets are and target them.
So, I mean, you have a lot, I mean, there's a lot of roots down to earth methods that you have to do. I mean, it's a lot of phone, it's a lot of internet, it's a lot of blogging, it's a lot of email. I mean, there's just a lot encompassing, you know, something for this. So, Chris, when you went to Megan and, you know, you had your book and it started going and you were doing pretty good, but you needed this extra PR, what was your expectations for your book? I mean, what was your goal set when you said, okay, I'm taking this over here to Goldberg McDuffie, you know, this is what I want out of it?
I really didn't know what to expect, honestly. I have not done this before, and I knew that publishing a book now, a novel, is a total crapshoot. I mean, there are great books out there that are relatively ignored, and other books that, for some reason or another, become the biggest story ever. You can't predict what the marketplace is going to do. So really all I was hoping for was just a guide, just some kind of roadmap to figure out what I could possibly do to maximize my chances to get my book in front of people, to get them to read it. And I think my expectations, I mean, you know, like I said, I was a reporter, and you tend to, I think, live in the world of worst-case scenarios when you're in journalism. But I had, you know, a relatively low set of expectations, so they weren't that hard to beat. But I'm still blown away by what Megan was able to accomplish. I mean, the book was mentioned in the New York Times. We had a fantastic review in the Washington Post. It was on NPR. It was in USA Today. It's just, you don't get that kind of response for a first-time novel ever. So I'm just
when you wrote it, I mean, when you had it on, I mean, it hit, you know, we loved it. You can definitely tell from, you know, the publicity and the stuff that we gave it because, you know, we received hundreds of books also. I mean, I guess, you know, our magazine submission process is not much different than anyone else's. You know, they still have to send these things in, and we get hundreds. I mean, we get probably 50 books a week, and, you know, we have to send them out, and people have to review them. We review them in-house and things like that, but, you know, it's a big submission process. So when we put reviews in the magazine and we talk about them on the radio show, it's ones that we are behind and that we – you know, generally feel and have you on the radio that, you know, you're someone who needs to be further into the spotlight than you already are because your work is so inspiring and it's so well done. And, you know, that's what Megan saw and that's what, you know, your publisher saw. So, yeah, I mean.
Well, thanks. That's really kind of you. But, yeah, I absolutely, you know, I'm starting to believe it. Megan is starting to convince even me, so I really.
Oh, and I guess, and that's probably. Is just convincing you, right? Because you sound very humble.
Well, I don't know about humble, but you know, I'm like I said, as a journalist, you live in the world of worst case scenarios, so you try to never be too optimistic, and so you're pleasantly surprised by all the good news that eventually does come your way. And yeah, I just also think that I've been really, really lucky. I've been lucky to find good people, and I've been lucky that people like you have responded so strongly to the book. You know, I mean, no writer is any place without readers. And that's, for me, that's the important thing.
So, well, Chris, I have another question for you here that came from the chat room. And I just want to remind everybody first, before we go on, because I'm terrible at this, and people always have to remind me to do this, is that we are speaking right now with author Chris Farnsworth and his publicist from Goldberg McDuffie, Megan Beatty. So, Chris, the question that I have for you that came in was, do you find inspiration in others' authors? Perhaps one of your favorite is A Kind of Muse.
Other authors?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry, I just, yeah, absolutely. I read voraciously. I've read, I learned to read when I was four, and I haven't stopped, you know, since. It's just, I have a pile of books at all times, and I love finding a new author. I love going back to old favorites. My favorite spy novel of all time, I've told everybody this, is Shibumi. It's Shibumi by a guy named Trevanian. And it's just a fantastic work. It was done in the 70s, but it's one of the most prescient spy novels I've ever read. And when I need to figure out how to do something right, I go back to that. Aside from that, there's just an enormous list of writers who are so incredible, and I couldn't go into all of them, but I tend to go back to, yeah, Neil Gaiman, I go back to Grant Morrison, Jack Kirby, Stan Lee, an obscure Texas journalist by the name of Thomas Thompson, John Burdett, John Sanford, Terry Pratchett, Tom Holt.
It sounds like you just won an Emmy and you're thanking everyone.
You know, I know, Richard K. Morgan. No, but there are so many. I mean, I literally can't name them all. John Connolly, but there are so many good writers. And that's, you know, one of the greatest things about being alive at this time is that you walk into any bookstore or any library, you have literally hundreds of thousands more choices than, people did even 50 or 60 years ago. And you can pick up any book almost and find something truly fascinating about it.
So now, Megan, I have a question for you because they're coming in rapid fire here. Do you find demographics come into play when you're publicizing in any way?
In terms of age groups or sex or what do you think?
You know, I think it's just any kind of demographics,
yeah.
Whether it's male or female, young or old.
You know, this is a good question. What I find interesting is for instance, thrillers by male writers are rarely ever covered or reviewed in women's magazines, yet so many women are reading thrillers. So, you know, I've been a fan of thrillers forever, and I remember reading Lee Child's first book, Killing Floor, and just being just agog, and you know, I've been a huge fan of him ever since. So it's interesting that you know thrillers are often thought of as kind of more for men, yet so many women read them. I guess I'm not really answering this question very well. You know,
I think you're doing great. You're doing great.
We certainly try to get, you know, books out to the widest possible audience. That women seem to read, they say women read more books than men. I don't know if that's true. We can certainly talk about that, but
yeah, I think maybe what they're looking at. So when you have Chris's book in here, do you have specific places to say, okay, I'm not going to go to, you know, Woman's Day to try to promote it. I'm going to have to go here. So I guess you kind of have your own set places that you go to for certain things.
Yeah, that's true. Women's Day is not going to cover a book like Chris's. Suspense Magazine, yes, they're going to. You know, I knew you guys would be interested in the book. So I certainly try and, you know, I don't want to just – my work is not scattershot. I don't want to just kind of see what sticks to the wall. I want to find those people in the media who are going to respond to the book. And that was really – that was part of my strategy with Chris's book is, for example – Jeff Boucher, who writes for the LA Times, he does a blog called Hero Complex, and he writes about superheroes and comic books. And you know, I just knew that he would like Blood Oath. So we went to him very early on. Chris's book came out this past May, and I think it was December, Chris?
Yeah, this November
Jeff
or December.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we went to Jeff early on and got him to do a preview of the book, and it was really great because it went viral, it was online, and we were able to stir up a lot of advance buzz that then led into the early spring and then into publication date, which was the middle of May.
Yeah, I love that term viral. It went viral. That's nice. It just kind of grew and just kind of kept going. So, well, now, so here's a question. So, Chris, so what are you doing right now as far as, you know, after Blood Oath? Are you writing your next book now? And is it something that automatically, you know, it goes over to Megan? I mean, is that kind of a contract that you sign with a PR company? It's like, okay, you're going to have the publisher's doing three books, so I want you to do all three books, too, if the first one goes well.
We didn't actually talk about that. That's a good question.
Okay.
No, I'm really thrilled. Obviously, I'm really thrilled with
that now.
Yeah, we're going to negotiate right here. Because there's no better place than on a radio show to discuss
it. I say we do
it
right now. That's SmackDown.
Yeah, no, I'm thrilled with what Goldberg, McMuffie, and what Megan have done. And yeah, I did just finish the second book and just sent it off to my editor actually a couple days ago. So it should be out hopefully around the same time next year. And as for, you know, what the publicity for it is going to be, I'm not sure yet. I honestly don't know. I did a really extensive book tour for the first one because I knew that it was important for me to get my name out there and to push the book myself. I mean, if this is something, you know, a lot of authors, I think a lot of aspiring authors, a lot of people, you know, and a lot of actually authors who are in the game are hesitant to do book tours sometimes because writers are basically introverts and they don't want to be seen as, you know, somehow it's unseemly to be, you know, pushing your wares like you're a salesman. But I kind of came to it with the idea that I really do think this is a good book. I think you should buy it. And also my daughter needs shoes. So I would like you to buy this book. And I was willing to put myself out there and to go any place pretty much that would have me. So we ended up doing, like, what was it, Megan, a 3-week book tour?
Yeah.
Ten or 11 cities. And by the end of it, I was pretty much just a potato with arms and legs. I couldn't think straight. So I'm not sure if we're going to do that again. but there's definitely going to be, a publicity initiative as well. And, yeah, I fully expect Megan to do that. I hope her schedule is clear.
I hope so. John, I just wanted to add to what Chris was saying. You know, I think the strategy for a first-time author is a little different than the next book, because it's your debut, you have a clean slate. You're a virgin. You know, no one knows you, for better or for worse. So it really is I've worked with a lot of debut novelists, and I think it's really important to have how you are, you know, introduced to the media and to the world. You know, once you have a reputation, you know, Chris now can go with his second book. He has this incredible stable of reviews from the first. So, you know, he's now been established in the marketplace. But with a first-time author, you know, here's your chance to be whoever you're going to be. So with Chris, I was a little concerned about him doing as an extensive tour as he did, because you know, no one knew who he was, and I was so worried that he would go to the Poison Pen book signing and no one would show up. But he was fully aware about those possibilities, and what was great about it is that he was able to foster and start these relationships with these bookstores who are so influential, who have these incredible mailing lists, who hand sell their books. And I have no doubt that every store that Chris went to is going to be pushing the heck out of his next book.
Just to add to that, the book, I was amazed whenever anybody showed up, because they didn't know who I was, and there was, you know, no reason for them to be there. But we got really very, you know, in some places really substantial crowds, but in every place a good turnout. And the independent bookstores, you know, people talk about the end of the indie bookstore. I don't see it happening. I don't see that as true, because these people are the ones who have the relationships with their customers, and they're the ones who can say, hey, you would really like this, you should buy it. And you know, most of my sales in the first 2 weeks actually came from independents.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing in any kind of, whether it's the music genre. You have, you know, your local music store here, you go in, you know the person, and they say, hey, if you know, I know you bought this, I bet you would like this. Well, you're not going to get that when you go to those big chains. You're going to get that when you go to those smaller places and you have that rapport, and they're going to say, hey, you know what, I know you just bought Chris's book here, you know, a couple weeks ago, but this guy or this girl, you know, you should read their book, because this is another great one that I think that you would like. So I like that purpose.
Right.
You know,
yeah, and I there are a lot of people who still go to independent bookstores, and I think for the personal recommendation side, the internet is filling the gap on the other side for the large chains and for Amazon. I think people look to blogs. I think people look to online magazines, and they look to their social networks of friends, you know, that they may have never met, but people that they know have similar tastes.
Absolutely, and it's the same thing. I think that Barnes & Noble and Borders and Books A Million are the ones who are putting out those press releases saying it's the death of independent bookstores. You know, so, hey, that's just – I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I understand if that's what's going on. So, you know, but, you know, Chris, you kind of – can you give us a little insight? You said that your book has gone over to your editor. Now, can you give us a little insight about, you know, what it's about?
It's basically –
Is it a continuation, or is it a whole – Kind of
it's a, yeah, it's the second book in the series about Nathaniel Cade. And Cade and his new partner, Zach, have to deal with an outbreak of another threat from the other side. And this one, I'm trying to think how to best describe it without any spoilers.
Spoilers.
In the first chapter,
is it a standalone, or do you have to read the first one to read the second one?
No, you don't have to read the first one to read the second one. I that's one thing I actually is kind of a pet peeve of mine. There are some of these massive sci-fi, you know, doorstop novels that I read, and I love them, but I'm like to the 9th or 10th book in some of these series, and they literally pick up one page after the previous one left off. And I feel terrible for whoever must have, you know, picked that up, that book up for the first time, and they have no idea what's going on. So I always try to, you know, do sort of like a previously on, you know, the back, and get the backstory in as quickly as I can. But I can, here's what I can say. In the first chapter, Cade fights Osama bin Laden.
Ah, so you know where he is.
Yeah, it's the mystery is solved right in the first chapter.
So you know, it's going to come out, and you said it's going to come out about the same time, like a year from now?
Hopefully, okay. Yeah. I don't know the schedule yet. As soon as I have a release date, I will post it on the website and on the Facebook site. But
okay, that'll be very interesting. So we can all figure that. So we got about 365 days, everybody, and the mystery of what.
Actually, a little less. Hopefully, around May.
So when you send that book to your editor, send that back with some changes and things like that that you know you have to maybe do, or is he going to say, Chris, I don't really like this. You might have to work on this, or is that process already been done?
No, actually, that's part of the process. Rachel Kahn is my editor at Putnam, and she's great. She's very smart, and I take her very seriously. She's been doing this for a while, and she knows what goes into a good book. So if something causes her pause or concern, then I absolutely listen to it. That said, you know, I've already run it past my agent, and I've run it past my first readers, including and especially my wife, and I trust their instincts as well. And I try to give, you know, as clean a final draft as I possibly can. I'm not just handing over my notes. Again, this is a hangover from being a reporter, but you don't have a chance to, you know, your editor at the end of the day doesn't want to spend an hour with you whipping your story into shape. It should be as clean as humanly possible, and that's what I try to do. I want to make sure that what I hand to Rachel is as close as I can get to what's going to be on the stands.
So I want to remind everybody again, because I keep getting nudged here, that we are speaking with author Chris Farnsworth, best-selling author of The Blood Oath, and his book publicist from Goldberg McDuffie, Megan Beatty. So, Megan, my question to you now is, and this is actually coming from me. So what is the best submission process or the best way for an author that has a book now, is looking to find publicity, to find you and to get to you, to say, you know what, I want to use Goldberg McDuffie for, you know, and hopefully they'll use me. What's the best way that they can do that?
Sure. Well, they can email me. I'm mbeatie, M-B-E-A-T-I-E, at goldbergmcduffie.com. Yeah, I think just send me an email, brief note about the book and the publisher. I really only work with authors who have already got a publisher in place. I usually start actively working with an author about 6 to 8 months before the book is going to be out in stores. So I'm always happy to hear from authors before then, because then we can kind of get on the schedule and make a plan and all that. But yeah, you know, I'm happy to hear from authors and you know, find out about what their book is and see, you know, how we might work together.
Now, that's interesting that you say they have a publisher in place. Now, with all the ebook stuff that is going on right now, would you guys ever consider maybe expanding that and saying, okay, you know what? Because we've had a lot of authors like Chris Kuzneski, Boyd Morrison. Lynn started kind of that way, is, you know, somebody who has either, you know, ebooked themselves out there to get themselves going. Would you guys consider taking, you know, on one of those books?
I absolutely would. It's so interesting, you know, back in the olden days, like an author who didn't have a traditional publisher, we would not get involved with them. And, you know, this is a brand new world where, you know, the possibilities are endless. So I absolutely would. You know, it really will depend on how good the writing is and also if there's distribution, because our work, you know, we work on a national and a local level, so meaning we're going after media like the New York Times and USA Today. So if we are to secure something, in one of those publications for an author and the book's not available in stores, online, then it the work isn't really making a difference. So that's those two things are really important. The writing has to stand on its own, and there has to be some sort of distribution channel in place.
And do you want them to sit there and possibly say, because I know that you and Chris sat down and you probably got to put a marketing plan together and what to do, and here's what I've already done. Does that help?
Sorry, John, can you just repeat that? We cut out a little bit there.
That's okay. So I know that you and Chris, when you guys got together, you guys talked about marketing strategy and things like that. So if someone were to submit a book to you and say, okay, here's my book, here's my marketing strategy or what I want to do, here's what I've already done or I'm doing now, does that help you?
Absolutely. I love proactive authors, and it's really important. And one of the first things Chris and I talked about was, I said, okay, who do you know, Chris? And the fact that he had been a journalist was so great because he had all these fantastic media contacts already, because we certainly want to utilize all those personal connections. So I'm always happy to meet with authors and to talk to them, see what they've already done, see what their expectations are, and see if, in my opinion, that they're realistic, because that's so important in starting out on a campaign with a publicist. If for the authors out there, if they are talking to any publicist who says, no problem, I can get you on the Today Show, or I can get you on whatever it is, there are just no guarantees. So when you work with me, you know you're going to get my best effort, but I just would never promise being able to deliver anything, because you just don't know. It's a very subjective process.
So Chris, going forward, we only have a couple minutes left before we jump into the SmackDown, and so going forward here, I want to know something. I want to go back and say, when you first kind of always ask authors, is how long when you finished your book did you finally get it accepted? And the other thing is, what did you do and how did you celebrate when it happened?
Let's see.
I'm looking for the reason I keep asking is because I'm looking for the crazy story of somebody saying, I got the call and I ran outside naked and I didn't even realize I was because I was in the shower and I was so excited and then I got embarrassed. Nobody's given me that one yet, so hopefully you'll be the first.
No, sorry.
Oh, right.
I'm not gonna break your streak, so to speak. I'm trying to. The book itself took me about 8 months to write, and I started writing it at the around the beginning of the Writers Guild strike here in Los Angeles, because I was trying to work as a screenwriter, and then I couldn't even, fail at that when the strike was on. And my wife and I were about to have a baby, and that was a really good time to be unemployed. So I had this idea, and I figured this was, this was my last shot. So I wrote in about 8 months. It took me about 4 months to find an agent, to find Alexandra. And she turned out to be the perfect person for it. I had a couple other people interested, but she was the right one. And I think we solidified the deal like a month after that. She almost immediately had it on people's desks and people interested, and when I heard I'm trying to remember what we did, and again we just had the baby, so I think maybe I took a nap that day, because we were still in the up all night phases of parenthood.
Oh, I know how that is. I got 4 kids. I've been up all night a lot. Thank God school starts tomorrow for LVUSD, because I can't wait to get them out of the house.
Yeah.
So I know how that is. So now Megan, I guess, and it might be tough to kind of put this on there, but when an author gets published, that's, or finds an agent and gets it going, I mean, that's kind of like almost the highlight right there of like their career. Now, what would you associate that with on your side? And the New York Times says, yes, we'll review it or puts it in because, you know, I mean, I know the New York Times is, you know, much bigger than our publication or USA Today and things like that. How would you associate the same thing that an author has on that side that you would get?
Oh, gosh. Well, I have this little thing called the publicity dance, and when I get some great media hit, yes, it's true,
Chris,
I stand up in my office and I do my little publicity dance because, you know, I just, and like I said, you know, I've been doing this for a while, and I just, it never gets old. When you get something great, and I'm telling you, Suspense Magazine for me is great to get. New York Times is great to get. When I get anything like that, you know, I have to do my little publicity dance because, you know, it's just really exciting. And, you know, you feel like you've reached somebody, you've connected, and you're gonna hit an audience. You know, certainly the New York Times is a huge thing to get, but a lot of people who read the New York Times are not going to be responding to Blood Oath.
True.
I believe, and I hope everyone who's reading Suspense Magazine is either has bought or is going to buy a copy of Blood Oath.
Absolutely. And
yeah,
so,
I think you'd qualify absolutely as our target audience. I think your readers are into the bloodthirsty and the kick ass and the action. So
yeah, and that's why we kind of started the magazine, you know, not just for authors like you, but you know, for authors everywhere that are kind of looking for that platform. So real quick, Megan. So 10 seconds before we start, I want a real quick question. What is the average percentage of when you go to a place, and I think this is important for a lot of authors to hear, the average percentage, if you send out 100 emails to 100 different places, what percentage do you actually get a response back?
It depends,
in
but
the average,
on
the average
I'm going to say 10 or less, and some of those might be out of office messages.
So really you're looking at less than 10% of everything you send out that you get something back. So
yeah, you know, it's,
you know,
just
high lofty expectations about saying, well, you sent out 100, well, how come you haven't got 80 people responding back?
Yeah, well, I think that's a big frustration for authors because they say, well, you pitched 300 people, why don't you have 300 responses? And you know, it's the honest truth is that the media, they're busy, and, you know, John, like when you're hearing from, you know, all sorts of people, you're going to respond to the things that you want to do, and the things that you don't want to do, you know, it's really hard to get back to people and say, no, I don't want this.
Right, right. So, well, I'll tell you, author Chris Farnsworth, Blood Oath, and book publicist Megan Beatty, of Vice President and Director of Publicity for Goldwyn McDuffie. It's been great having you, but don't go anywhere because you're going to join me here on the SmackDown real fast, and it starts now.
I'm already giving you instruction in the dressing room. I expect a tough, clean fight. Protect yourself at all times. Requesting from the challenger. Champion, get it on!
Let's get it on. I bet you guys didn't realize that we are a high production society radio here. So so the SmackDown tonight, as I kind of do something a little different, is we have Robert Langdon in One Quarter, written by Dan Brown, who is a religious artifact seeker symbologist. But in the other corner, we have George Lucas's creation, who a lot of books were written about, but it was actually after the movie of Raiders of the Lost Ark and Indiana Jones, who also has the religious artifact seeker archaeology side. So my question to Chris first is, which character did you like best?
Oh, no question. You there, John?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, no question, Indiana Jones. Indiana has, you know, Dr. Jones has he has all the hallmarks of a great pulp hero. He's got he's got almost the secret identity of when he's the professor with the glasses, but he's also you know, the man of action, the two-fisted hero out in the world. And I think though that he towers over Langdon for just one reason, and that's the famous scene in Raiders.
If you're gonna say the eyelid, that's it.
No, it's not the eyelids. It's the marketplace scene. The guy comes out with his sword, and he shows off all his fancy moves. And Indiana just stands there, Jones just stands there, and then shoots him. And it's just such a direct, no BS, totally American way.
If you didn't know, that was actually, he was so tired.
He had the flu. Yeah, he was incredible. Harrison Ford was incredibly sick. It was supposed to be a long fight scene. He was barely on his feet. And he said, why don't I just shoot him? And it just makes so much more sense.
And that made the sense. So, Megan, I'm going to ask you, which one for you?
I'm going to have to go with Indiana Jones, too. He's frankly, he's just sexier.
Oh, okay, not with the Tom Hanks.
No, I mean, Indy Jones has got, he's got the physical thing going and the mental thing. And for me, Robert Langdon was just all cerebral. So, Indy Jones, all the way.
That was going to be my next answer, is just that I find Indiana Jones sexy.
You find Indiana Jones? Well, I'll tell you.
Well, who doesn't? The whip? I mean, come on.
That's true. And then you know, they love that scene so much in Indiana Jones that they actually put it in the Temple of Doom, which a lot of people don't really count on an Indiana Jones movie as when he looked for the gun and it wasn't there.
Right.
But I'm actually going to say, you know, because it wouldn't be a smackdown, Indiana Jones is, and Indiana Jones is winning big on the website, but here's my play for Robert Langdon, and the reason I'm going to go with him is just for the simple fact that I think that Indiana Jones, when they put out The Last Crusade, because both of them have looked for, you know, the Holy Grail, and I'm going to say that, you know, George Lucas used it more of an artifact, where Robert Langdon and Dan Brown used it more as a spiritual side, was that I think that the stories that Robert Langdon in is a little bit more complex, and his character is just a little bit more you know, not just action-adventure, because he does have a lot of action-adventure, whether it's, you know, in Angels and Demons, which was a lot. But I just find that Robert Langdon is a little bit, I guess you want to say, and I'm going to probably use the wrong word here, maybe a little bit more on the smoother side. I just find myself more intrigued with his stories and the way that he's doing it a little more than Indiana Jones, even though I think that Harrison Ford did do a fabulous job in it. Now, I know I'm getting absolutely annihilated because everyone thought Indiana Jones was much better, but you know, I'm picking the book character here because, you know, I got the authors and instead of the movie character, but I kind of think that they're, you know, okay, Indiana Jones was better, but I can't, you know, but it's not
a wow, that was a quick turnaround.
Yeah, but you know, but I do think that it was good to put the two together, just because you do have so much different balance in both of them. You know, something that hasn't been found, because, you know, they haven't found Noah's Ark yet, so maybe they can go do that together. I have no idea.
Actually, in Boyd's book, they did find Noah's Ark.
In Boyd's book, they did too.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Chris and Megan, I want to thank you guys so much for coming on here tonight. And Chris, real fast, I believe this is, you know, your correct website, because it says chrisfarnsworth.wordpress.com.
Or just chrisfarnsworth.com or presidentsvampire.com.
Okay, so that's where you can find out more about Chris, and his book, Blood Oath, is available everywhere, all over the place. Megan, if you want to give out your email address one more time, so anyone who's listening would like to email you, any authors, potential authors, go right ahead.
Sure. Our website is goldbergmcduffie.com, and that's goldbergmcduffie.com. And I'm M. Beatty, M-B-E-A-T-I-E, at goldbergmcduffie.com.
Fabulous. Well, guys, it was great. I thought that this format worked really well. And, Chris, you got to keep us up to date so we all know about your next book coming out. So we're looking forward to that. Megan, we'll be talking, because I'm sure we're going to have many more of your authors on. So, guys, again, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciated it.
Thank you.
Thanks,
so much, John. This
was
fantastic.
A lot of fun.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Take care. Bye.
So that was Chris Farnsworth and Megan Beatty, and I want to let you guys News legal analyst, hard for me to say, Liz Wheel coming on with her book, Hand of Fate, the triple threat novel, along with Nora McFarland, who wrote a book, A Bad Day's Work. So they're going to be joining us on this Friday at 6 o'clock Pacific time coming up. That's 9 o'clock Eastern time. So until Friday, we will see you all coming back Friday again, suspensemagazine.com. Until then, here you go.